scripture. Let me get you caught up to where we are in the Old Testament story. Last week we read the dedication of the temple that Solomon built. Well, at this point in the story where we are today, Solomon has died. And when that happened, unfortunately, the kingdom of Israel split. Rehoboam, Solomon's son, continued his father's practices of overtaxing the rural areas, particularly the northern part of the country. And so the northern part broke off and became Israel, while the southern kingdom took on the name of Judah. Today we meet Elijah, who is probably the most significant of the Old Testament prophets. Elijah is a prophet up in the northern kingdom, and he does his work during the time of King Ahaz and his wife, or Ahab, excuse me, and his wife Jezebel. Jezebel has got her husband, who is Jewish, worshiping Baal, the god of the Canaanites. And this very much upsets God and Elijah, and so there's this big contest between Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Elijah wins, of course. He kills the prophets of Baal, and that's where our reading picks up. So this is from the Old Testament book of 1 Kings, chapter 19. So King Ahab told his wife Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. And then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah, saying, "So may the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life like the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." Then Elijah was afraid. He got up and fled for his life. He came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and he left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a solitary broom tree. He asked that he might die. "It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am no better than my ancestors." Then he lay down under the broom tree and fell asleep. Suddenly, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked, and there at his head was a cake baked on hot stones in a jar of water. He ate and drank and lay down again. The angel of the Lord came a second time, touched him and said, "Get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you." Elijah got up and ate and drank, and then he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, or Sinai, the Mount of God. And at that place he came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And Elijah answered, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." But God said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting the mountains and breaking the rocks in pieces before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Elijah answered, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." Then the Lord said to him, "Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. When you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael as king over Aram. You shall anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. And you shall appoint Elisha, son of Shapheth of Abel-Meholah, as prophet in your place." Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God.
So before we try to figure out what this ancient and somewhat strange story might mean for us today, I need to give you just a little more background. I mentioned that right before our story took place is this contest between the prophet Elijah and the priests of Baal. But I got to fill it in a little bit. So there's 450 priests of Baal that Elijah challenges to this contest. So he invites all the people of Israel to come and watch this contest between Elijah, who is God's, Yahweh's prophet, and these 450 prophets of Baal, the god of the Canaanites. And the contest is this. They're both going to build altars and put a sacrifice on it, but then instead of lighting the fires themselves, they're going to call on their god to light the fires. And so the Canaanites, the prophets of Baal go first, and they build their altar, they put the wood on it, and they put their animal on it, and then they start praying and dancing and singing to get Baal to send down fire from heaven. And it's really a great story because obviously nothing happens, and Elijah just mocks them. "Is your God sleeping? Maybe he's going to the bathroom. Where is your God?" And finally, they stop, and it's Elijah's turn. Elijah builds his altar, puts his animal on it, and then he tells them, "Pour water on it." I don't know how much water. It's ridiculous. You know, 75 gallons of water they pour on Elijah's sacrifice. And Elijah calls on God, and pow! Fire comes down from heaven and just consumes the entire thing, water and all. And then the story gets dark because Elijah decides to kill the 450 prophets of Baal. Never says God told him to do that, but anyway, it happens. So that's kind of the full background. And that's where our story picks up. And so after Ahab and Queen Jezebel hear what happened to their 450 prophets, Jezebel says she's going to have Elijah killed that very day. And Elijah freaks out, and he runs. So you remember I said he was up in the northern kingdom where he did his work? Well, he goes to Beersheba, which is at the very southern part of the southern kingdom. And then, after he leaves his servant, he goes even further south. And he's headed toward Mount Horeb, or Mount Sinai, where God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. On his way, Elijah falls asleep, and God provides food and drink to sustain him, leads him to Mount Horeb, and then when he gets there, as you recall, God asks the question, "Elijah, what are you doing here?" And then we hear this complaint of Elijah. "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." It's interesting. I'm on a Facebook group of other people who use the narrative lectionary, and A lot of people commented that they, when they heard Elijah say this, that they took it as kind of arrogance, that somehow Elijah was bragging about his zeal, his passion for the Lord, and bragging that he was the only one who was faithful and who was left. But I don't think that's what's going on here. Maybe I'm wrong, but when I hear what Elijah says, what comes to my mind is that Elijah is going through one of those dark night of the souls experiences. You're familiar with those, aren't you? It's those times in our lives when we feel like everything we've done or are doing isn't enough, that we have no idea what we should do next. We feel like we're just not up to the task. And then on top of it all, it seems as if God is nowhere to be seen, that God is not helping in the least. And of course, that's the irony of this story, isn't it? That's why I wanted to make sure I told you the whole details about that contest. It just wasn't long ago that Elijah sees God send fire from heaven to consume this sacrifice. And then if that's not enough, God provides that food and that water in the desert so that Elijah can make this 40-day trip to Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai. It's hard to understand how Elijah doesn't see God's presence with him. But I think, as we all know, no one can judge anyone else's dark night of the soul. We've all been there, haven't we? You've had those times in your life. I've had those times in my life when we feel like nothing that we're doing is good enough, that we have no idea what the next thing we should do is, when we feel totally inadequate for what lies ahead. And then on top of all of it, it doesn't seem like God is anywhere to be found. Have you ever tried to explain your dark soul of the night to someone else? You know, all too often when we do that, you know, they say things that are meant to be helpful. You know, it's okay. It's going to be better. It's not as bad as it seems. But again, no one else can judge your dark night of the soul. We all go through it differently, and yet in a lot of ways in the same ways. That sense of hopelessness and despair and uncertainty. So how does God respond to Elijah in the midst of his dark night of the soul? God says, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." So picture Elijah going out, standing on this mountain, and all of a sudden, there is such a blast of wind that it's rending mountains and crushing stones. And yet, for some reason, Elijah realizes that God's not there. That's not what God is doing. But then all of a sudden, there's an earthquake. Everything shakes. But again, somehow Elijah has this sense that that's not God either. And then this huge fire erupts. And again, Elijah doesn't sense God in that fire. Now keep in mind, he's on Mount Sinai, where Moses was, where Moses met God through wind, fire, and earthquake, but not Elijah. God promised to come by, but God has not yet come by. But then, after those amazing things, there is this sheer silence, or what used to be translated, a still, small voice. And when he hears it, he wraps his face in his mantle, and he went out and he stood at the entrance of the cave. Now, the text does not at all make clear. This is where we have to use our imagination. I don't know what Elijah made of that sheer silence or that still small voice. It just doesn't say. But Elijah hears something. He comes out. And a God again asks him the same question. Elijah, what are you doing here? And I think what I find so surprising of this story, Elijah gives the exact same answer. I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, killed the prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away. See, one could argue, based on Elijah's response to that same question, by giving the same answer, that nothing has changed for him. That even though he might have heard this sheer silence or this small voice, still small voice of God, that nothing has changed. Elijah still seems to be firmly in the dark night of the soul. I think he still feels like he's not enough, and he doesn't know what to do next. He's sure that he's not up to whatever task there is. But maybe what is different for Elijah is that God told him that God was going to pass by. And even though for some reason Elijah knew that God wasn't in the fire or the earthquake or the wind, Elijah trusts that God therefore must have been in that sound of sheer silence, that still small voice. I don't think that's what Elijah was expecting. I don't think that's what he was hoping for. I'm sure he would much rather experience God in that powerful way he did in the contest with the prophets of Baal. But I think that Elijah trusts God when God said, I am going to come to you. And since God wasn't in the wind or the earthquake or the fire, then God must have been present in that sound of sheer silence, and that still small voice. Now, obviously, that did not fix everything for Elijah. He still felt the same way. He still had the same fears, and yet something did change. Because after Elijah explains again for the second time how inadequate he feels, God nevertheless gives him a task. Elijah, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, because I have got things for you to do. And no matter how fearful, alone, inadequate Elijah feels, he does what God asks him to do. Not because God has promised him any great powers, obviously, but yet in the midst of his doubts and his fear, Elijah goes back to do the work of God, trusting only in a God who has come to him in sheer silence, in a still, small voice. Raise your hand if God has ever come to you in fire, earthquake, or wind. I'm just showing you how to do it. I haven't either. It would be great, though, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be nice after some prayer of desperation that all of a sudden God would do something so obvious, so powerful, that we had no doubt that God was right there with us? But most of us haven't experienced that. I just don't think that happens very often. Instead, I think God comes to us the way that God came to Elijah on that mountain in his dark night of the soul, through things that are simple and subtle, like sheer silence or a still small voice. But this is what I'm wondering. How attuned are we to God coming to us in quiet, subtle, simple ways? How good are we at listening to God to speak in sheer silence or in a still, small voice? You see, I believe with my whole heart and my whole being that God comes to us the same way that God came to Elijah and Moses and all those other people in the Bible we read about. God comes to us, God calls us, God empowers us. But I fear that we're often not intentional about opening ourselves to hear God call and speak to us in those simple, quiet ways. I hope that's what you're here for this morning. We gather here every week so that God can encounter us in word and water and bread and wine. But what are we doing beyond that? And let's be honest. Church is not working for people the way it used to. I'm thrilled you're here. I hope and I pray and I trust that when you come to this place that you do experience God. But for more and more people, this format isn't working. What are the ways we can find to attune ourselves to hear God speak in those ways? This is the plug for Adult Forum after this. The sermon was not written as this plug. It just fits in so nice. We're going to do over the next 3 weeks just three simple spiritual practices. We're going to do Lectio Divina this week, next week, meditation, the week after that, contemplative prayer. Just simple ways to silence ourselves, open ourselves to hearing God speak to us. My friends, I don't know if you're going through a dark soul of the night period in your life right now or if things are kind of humming along real smoothly. I do know this, whatever is going on in your life, God is with you. Does not mean your life is going to get any easier. It does mean you are not alone. It means that God is working in you and through you, often in ways you don't even see. It means that your life matters, that you have something unique and important to contribute to the building of God's kingdom. As we gather on All Saints Sunday, as we welcome two children into God's family, I want you to remember that you had water poured on your head. You had the mark of Christ sealed on your forehead. You have been made a saint of the living God. Thanks be to God. Amen.